Welcome to Out in the Bay, queer radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. Where do feminism and drag meet?
This evening, we're going to create feminine space together. A space of multiplicity, of potentiality, which means a lot of things may happen tonight. We might get a little non-linear. Intuitive.
That's just a tease from this week's guest, Monique Jenkinson, a.k.a. Phonique, performing in her show, The F Word, in 2016 at Oasis. We'll hear more from it later. A choreographer, dancer, and performance artist, Ms. Jenkinson. Oh, may I call you Ms.? Should I call you Ms.?
You may.
Great. Since making herstory as the first cisgender female to be crowned Miss Tranny Shack in 2003, raising many glittery eyebrows at the time, Monique has performed nationally and internationally in venues ranging from nightclubs and museums to San Francisco City Hall. Her art has resulted in multiple awards and honors, including a Goldie Award from the San Francisco Bay Guardian and a residency at the Headland Center for the Arts. She joins me, perhaps we should call it for a kiki, to talk about drag, feminism, and more, and to read from and let you know about her new book, Faux Queen, A Life in Drag. It's a collection of essays about Monique's life and career, chronicling the journey of this classically trained ballet dancer from California suburbs to Colorado to San Francisco's underground drag scene and beyond. Monique Jenkinson, welcome to Out in the Bay.
Thank you so much, Eric. It's so great to be here.
Do you prefer like Monique or Phonique? I mean, the book is under the name Monique.
Right. Well, I am in full drag right now. So, you know, the rule is usually when you're in drag, you go by your drag name. And when you're out of drag, you don't. But most people in our community go by their drag names because, you know, there's a lot of Michaels, but, you know, there's only one Precious Moments or fill in the blank, right? So, so you can call me Monique or Phonique. I answer to both.
Phonique, you have some passages to read for us. Where would you like to start?
I do. This is from Faux Queen, A Life in Drag, which I would call a collection of essays in drag as a memoir. So this little section is about me choosing my drag name, Phonique. Most importantly, Phonique speaks to artifice and authenticity through artifice. The culture portrays drag as frivolous fun, but it is also serious art in extravagant disguise. Claiming the fakery emboldened me in the same way that drag itself did. If I proclaimed that this was all fake, it let me and my audience off the hook and left space for surprise. The name was a tactic that would work in multiple situations. Phonique allows me to play with ideas of belonging or feeling like I don't. It evokes the feeling I had when I realized that the pretend neutral version of authenticity espoused by the post-Judson contemporary dance world was not mine. Phonique articulates the authenticity I found in drag.
That was Monique Jenkinson reading from her new memoir, Faux Queen, A Life in Drag, which came out January 25th. We'll have a link on our site, outinthebay.org.
And this is from chapter one, What's in My Purse? As a cisgender woman performing as a drag queen in a world of cisgender men doing the same, people ask me if I get accused of trespassing, when what they really want to ask is, are drag queens as bitchy as they are on TV? Do they hate you? By drag queens, they mean real drag queens. By real drag queens, they mean men. I answer, no, not in my world. I conceived and birthed my drag persona in a warm pool of liberation and love surrounded by cheerleading drag doulas. Sure, there was the rare naysayer who questioned my presence while clutching her pearls and clucking about women treading on gay men's territory. She was not drag family, but usually a distant relative from out of town, even if by out of town, I mean just across town. I was ushered into the San Francisco drag scene by queens who valued me for my talents as well as my quirks, who embraced and encouraged me. These queens understood deeply that I had been performing drag my entire life, that we all perform our genders to an extent, most of us in some form of drag, at least some of the time. And even when those queens dragged the abject and ridiculous aspects of femininity, the loving intentions of their humor was clear. I went from the club back into the world feeling valued, celebrated, and intellectually engaged.
Fantastic. Thank you. That's Monique Jenkinson reading from her book, Faux Queen, A Life in Drag. Congrats on writing it and getting it published.
Thank you. It was quite a journey.
Before we go much farther, you mentioned several times in the book problematic words. So maybe we should talk about that briefly. Tranny Shack, for example, the incubator of a new kind of drag that emerged in the 1990s and whose pageant you won in 2003, its very name was challenged many years ago. And the creator, Heclina, stopped using it, changed the name to Mother when it moved to Oasis. What can you tell us about that transition?
I definitely couldn't write this book without taking this language and this linguistic problem on head on, because the only reason, you know, I have a story to tell is because I won a thing called Miss Tranny Shack, and now that language is problematic. You know, back in the day, we were using it. And I say we, and of course, I'm part of this big umbrella that is the queer community. Of course, I'm not a trans woman, and it's not my purview to change the language or to say who can use this word. But in that moment, everyone was using the word for everyone else. It was a cute nickname that drag queens and trans women had for each other. You know, not everyone loved it, but it was, and it was a little bit provocative, but it definitely was used very loosely and very lovingly. So, you know, I believe in context, and I also believe language changes. But it's important for me to be able to tell this story and to be able to talk about history. I have to be able to use the language, and I'm trying to the best of my ability to contextualize it in a way that feels kind and that feels generous.
Let's talk about the institution that was Tranny Shack. How was that formative for you, and how was it important to San Francisco's flavor of drag?
Oh, it was so formative to me. I mean, I write about this in the book, but I entered into Tranny Shack for the first time. You know, I was kind of dragged there by my gay bestie, and I was overcome right away. I was a screaming fan. So it transformed my relationship to performance almost right away, and performance watching. I had never understood why, you know, screaming girls, you know, why girls screamed at rock and roll and the Beatles and the Stones and that kind of thing. And I understood in those moments of watching the shows at the Shack. And right away, it was like this invitation, you know, to me to perform there. It transformed my relationship to performance. It transformed my relationship to practice, to art practice, performance practice, which, you know, I had come from dance, but being invited into this weekly kind of down and dirty, loose but very frequent and regular practice was just, as they say, a game changer.
So this is the late 90s that you're getting involved in Tranny Shack. How did you happen to come to compete in the Miss Tranny Shack pageant?
Well, it's a long sort of journey, but really I just performed a lot. I performed and performed and performed on stage at the Shack, and, you know, I was just up there pretty much weekly, and I was sort of urged to compete by some dear friends. I wasn't convinced that I should. And I was kind of thinking, oh, do I need to be part of the competition? Do we need a woman Miss Tranny Shack? And all of my friends were kind of saying, yeah, I think it's time. You should do it. And then when I figured out that I could potentially be performing in front of 1,000 people, which was something I'd never done as a contemporary dancer and realized I might never do again. I thought, oh, what's the harm in just doing it? I may never perform for this kind of crowd again. And I had been part of that crowd, and that is a wonderful and loving crowd.
Yeah. So it's the fear factor wasn't too high.
Exactly.
Well, that's good. That's good. So you have another part of the book you're going to read. This is just after you've come home from one of the events, I guess, and suppository spelling, is that right? And one of the other drag queens are convinced the night before, they're saying, you know, we were never here, but we think you should enter.
Exactly.
So this is a day or two or a week later. This is the section you're going to read.
Right. This is about a week later. And this is, you know, what I'm calling them, the weird sisters or the three witches who came to my house to, you know, double toil and trouble to do a spell. What would happen if I competed? There wasn't any reason not to. As Kevin and I always said, and Kevin is my friend who first brought me to the shack. As Kevin and I always said, it was a drag show. Ooh, Mr. David Glamamore exclaimed to me after hearing the news, let's make you something. He rubbed his supremely skilled designer hands together and flung all 10 fingers in my direction. There was that spell again. Now I was in. Mr. David was going to make me something. An understatement. How could I pass this up? The phone rang. Because phones rang. It was, you know, the late 90s. Actually,
yes,
it was the early aughts. Phone still rang. Hi, it's me, Heclina. Juanita told me you're doing the pageant. Well, I don't know. What? She theatrically raised her voice. Even though we were on the phone, I could see her making a stink face and half mockingly, half genuinely shaking a raised fist. This was her tactic, pretend bullying that flirted with the real thing.
That's Monique Jenkinson reading from her collection of essays, Dragging as Memoir, Folk Queen, A Life in Drag, which came out January 25th. And the book is like 280 some pages. You know, you could read a couple chapters a week and have it last the whole year and unfold.
It's one way to do it. I mean, I really, as a performer, I want to know what people think right now.
We'll have a link to Folk Queen on our website, outinthebay.org, where you can hear this whole show and more than 40 from the past year and a half. That's outinthebay.org. Winning this pageant helped kind of propel you into being able to do other things. So you developed many other shows. I've seen a few of them. I've seen the F Word and C*NT. There's another one somewhere along the line. But we started the show with a clip from The F Word, a performance about feminism, past and present, which premiered in London in 2015. Is that right?
It did.
Yeah, okay.
I'm feeling it. And I have this feeling, you know, you all know. How's my intuition? We might get a little bit personal, a little vulnerable. We might get a little process oriented. I might ask you to hold space for me. Now this is more complicated. It's two hook and eyes. Do you know about those? Excellent. I have this feeling that you'll be able to hold space for me. Our brave space, right? Not a safe space. Safe space. It's not really my thing. No, I get it. I understand, right, wanting to run away and join a lesbian separatist Wiccan goat farm commune when it's all too much and even the rainbow is enough. But I'm not a separatist. I want to share my feminine space with you. I'm not irritated by allies in need of educating. I don't think that's any of you. I think you're all, you get it.
There's a couple of things I want to know. First of all, you talk about two hooks and an eye. Are you doing a striptease as this is happening?
Right. That's something to explain. I'm not doing a striptease. I'm doing the opposite. I'm getting members of the audience to actually help me into my next costume.
Ah, right. Okay, great. Okay.
Yes, I was thinking about that clip and thinking we might need to talk about hook and eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm one.
That's the bra.
Right. I'm going into the. It's the gown. So I'm going into the audience, and I think usually, you know, I think this was a lovely bear who I said, you know, are you familiar, honey, with hooks and eyes? Do you, you know, do you need my help? So yeah, I needed a little assistance getting into my gown. It's always kind of fun to enlist the audience.
Fantastic. What about this thing about not being irritated by allies in need of educating? It seems like there's a little bit of a F you to people who are being like politically, like super politically correct, perhaps, am I saying?
Right, right. Well, no, it's not an F you. It's just, and it is, it does come from this, you know, this idea that sometimes, you know, right now, and rightly so, there are a lot of people going like, it's not my job to educate you. And it's not. But I've always actually loved educating people. Like if people want to ask me about feminism, I'll talk to you about feminism. You know, I don't feel, for me personally, like I don't want to be in rooms with people who need to ask me, you know, sometimes irritating questions. This is about stuff or not irritating questions. And it's something that I've quoted Dan Savage actually sometimes when he's like, yeah, I'll tell you all about, you want to ask me about gay sex? I'll tell you about gay sex till you tell me to shut up, you know? And it's a little bit how I feel about, you know, feminism, but I'm kind of playing with the tropes of feminism. One of which is that, you know, it's not my job to educate you.
You're hearing Out in the Bay, queer radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. My guest is Monique Jenkinson, a.k.a. Phonique, dancer, performance artist, and now author. Her memoir, Faux Queen, A Life in Drag, came out January 25th. We'll have a link to Faux Queen on our website, outinthebay.org, where you can hear this whole show and more than 40 from the past year and a half. Please also consider making a donation there to help us keep bringing queer air to your ears. We're nonprofit and independent. We get no financial support from the radio stations that air us weekly, nor from podcast platforms. We rely on listeners. So please, if you can afford it, help us keep bringing queer air to your ears and to the ears of those who cannot afford it. That's outinthebay.org. Just hit any donate button, outinthebay.org. Let's hear another clip from The F Word, a performance about feminism, post and present. It premiered at the Hackney Attic in London in 2015.
Now, sisters, allies, honestly, I kind of wish we didn't need feminism.
Hello.
But we do, right? We need it more than ever. We need all the feminists. Right now, we need Anthony rhapsodizing about witchcraft and the moon. We need Beyonce putting it up in lights and commanding bitches to bow down. We need them all. This is not the time for paralyzing hyper critique. Only serves to fragment us, and we need to pull it together.
This clip ends with, you know, this is not the time for paralyzing hypercritique. What do you mean by paralyzing hypercritique?
Well, that was 2016 when we were all arguing about whether we hated Hillary or not, and, you know, whether we wanted to vote for her and whether we should be getting behind her. It was, you know, this moment. So it was a really interesting moment to be doing my feminist show in the midst of the 2016 election. So I did three shows that kind of happened along. They were like all October through early December. So it was like pre-election, and I was just having a really frustrating time with how divided the left felt, you know, being firmly on the left and but being very much Bernie or Hillary at that moment. And then it came down to Hillary, and it's like, look, we got to get behind her. I know we don't all love her. You know, again, I'm going to go back and quote another person, Fran Lebowitz. It's like, well, you're not going to have dinner with her. Like, she there makes right. a policy. You know, and I felt like so for me, paralyzing hypercritique is the place that the left can get into where it's like, well, I'm different from you and you're different from me and you can't possibly know my experience. And so I'm going to, you know, fold my arms and say harumph. And, you know, it's just, I wanted to kind of embody some of those, the things about feminism and feminism on the left that like do irritate me. And that's one of those things. This, you know, I do have a stubborn hope that we can come together in difference when it matters most and just get over our differences and our little pesky fragmenting feelings and get something done.
Did your performance of the F word change after the results of the election? I mean, you were mid-run, I should say.
Girl, it did. And I was just reminiscing about this. I performed on November 10th in Seattle, November 10th, 2016. So the election happened. I voted. I got on a plane. I watched the election with my friend. And we watched.
Everyone watched in shock. It was all these election watching parties and everybody's crying.
Oh, totally. We watched it go to can I cuss? I don't think I can, to SH. And I woke up like exhausted and having sobbed and having to do a show. And then I do this show at the lovely Rebar in Seattle, you know, about 15 people showed up, all of whom really, really needed to be at a feminist cabaret show. After that experience. So it was a tiny audience, but it was like a really loving, like deep audience. And it was almost like a spiritual experience. I do, you know, after I do this talk about we need to pull it together and we can't be paralyzed by hypercritique, I do, I kind of take on this benevolent witch character and I do a spell to undermine the white supremacist, heterosexist patriarchy. And I do this number, and after I did that number, there was just this voice from the back of the house that just goes, "Do it again," this woman's voice. And I thought like, oh, we need to do this piece. We need to do this spell as a flash mob, like every week this year. So that's, it did change the show. And yeah, it felt necessary, but it felt sad.
I have to ask how much anger, or perhaps I should say righteous rage, inspires or fuels your work?
Oh, a lot. And, you know, the piece you saw that, you know, you referred to the C word or the horror of nothing to see. I mean, it's kind of fun. I did the F word, which is my fun, cute cabaret show about feminism. And then later I did a show that, you know, in which I called the C word. I didn't call it the C word, but it uses that word because it's just, I was so mad. I just wanted to use, you know, what is this word that we use to, you know, it's like the worst thing you can call anyone, but it is not a reclaimed slur like queer. It just means what it means. And so it's like, and yet it's the worst thing you can say. And to me, that was like so profoundly misogynist. And I was just deep in my feminist rage when I made that piece. So a lot of my work kind of comes from that place. You know, I think it's important to keep your sense of humor and use it. And all the gay men in my life have taught me that they survived a plague through humor and the uses of it. And so that's, you know, one of the big, big lessons of this book and big themes of this book is my friendships with gay men and also, you know, how humor helps us through.
Yeah. And speaking about problematic words and the deep friendships you've had with gay men, you know, the term fag hag comes up for me, which was used a lot then, not so much anymore. But you had these, and you described these deep friendships you've had with gay men, and one of them went away. I'm not sure why. There was some fallout there. What do you think is the commonality that can bind cisgender women and gay men?
I think it's mysterious. I think, you know, the fag hag thing is, you know, it's fun. I've used it. It's fun. It's funny. It's retro. It doesn't quite, and I talk about this in the book, it doesn't quite get at the depth and mystery of my affinity with gay men. I mean, and then later, you know, I realized, like, I, you know, say, like, I love gay men most, not only, not all gay men, not only gay men, but most and mostly, you know, and it was, there were some important lessons about that not all gay men love me, and I don't love all gay men, but, you know, you can't love everybody, not everyone's gonna love you, but that affinity for me is, it's about measuring, I think, you know, the pain, the shared pain is about kind of measuring up to the culture's standards and knowing you kind of can't.
In Faux Queen, you write about participating in a masculinity workshop in Italy. What was that like?
It was great. It was great. I was traveling and performing with a bunch of Faux Queens or AFAB Queens or whatever the word we're using now for cis women who do drag, a bunch of them and a bunch of drag kings. So it was all assigned female at birth people doing all kinds of drag. And there was a masculinity workshop that I just popped into. And it was really interesting, but it was very foreign. And it was a great workshop, but it was kind of like, oh, this is not me. You know, it was very profoundly not me. And there was another queenie young man in the class too. And we both kind of exchanged looks like, this is not me. And that was, you know, it was deep. It was deep and profound to, you know, but I think it's so valuable as a dancer to inhabit, to imagine yourself into a body that you might not inhabit.
You talk in the book about Halloween as a little girl and as a teenager, and, you know, from that little girl on, how Halloween was so important. And I remember how, for me, Halloween in the Castro in the 90s, when Tranny Check and the Stud and all that stuff was just getting going, it was so fun and it was so liberating, I think, for me. That's the first time I ever did drag, was with my group of, you know, friends. And we went out with a little troupe and we had a routine and people cleared the way for us to do a performance. It was really fun.
What did you do?
One year we were the Solid Gold Dancers, and another year we were rhythmic gymnasts from Toledo, Ohio. The Toledo Twisters, actually, is what we were called.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
I'll show you the video sometime.
Please, because my first Halloween in the Castro, and I write about it in the book, my first Halloween in the Castro blew my mind. And this was 1992, so it was pre-Shaq, but there was a troupe of drag bowling team that did the same thing. They cleared the crowd and they had a little routine that they did. So, you know,
there were, like, a bunch of them rumbling around.
So
it was fun.
Good. But yeah, that year, I mean, there was, like, you know, everything from Easter Island statues to Scarlett O'Hara with her, you know, the Carol Burnett Scarlett O'Hara with the curtain dress, to the bowling team, to another, like, a flock of Carmen Mirandas. I mean, it was fabulous.
So you talk about Halloween and being, eventually you said, you know, to hell with it. I don't need to do this just on one day a year. And you started wearing sort of clothes that challenged your, the mean girls and stupid boys at school. And,
yes,
you know, consequences be damned. And here you are now, Faux'Nique.
Thank you.
Well, I want to thank you so much. My guest has been Monique Jenkinson, a.k.a. Faux'Nique, author of the new book, Faux Queen, A Life in Drag. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much, Eric. It's so fun to be here.
You've been listening to Out in the Bay. My guest was Monique Jenkinson, Faux'Nique, author of the new book, Faux Queen, A Life in Drag. To learn more about Monique Jenkinson and her memoir, check out our website, outinthebay.org. We'll have a link there to Faux Queen, outinthebay.org. That's where you can also hear this whole show if you missed the beginning or just want to hear it again, and more than 40 half hours from the past year and a half, and archives from our first decade. We hope you'll also please consider making a donation there to help us keep bringing queer air to your ears. We are nonprofit and independent. We get no dough from the radio stations that air us weekly, nor from podcast platforms. We rely on listeners. So please, if you can afford it, chip in what you can. at outinthebay.org. We thank you so much. That's outinthebay.org, where you can also sign up for our weekly email newsletter and subscribe to Out in the Bay podcasts. Our theme music was written and performed by Holly Mead. Thank you, Holly. Thanks also to KALW 91.7 FM and San Francisco Public Press and its radio station, KSFP 102.5 FM. Thanks also to our fabulous producer, Kendra Klang, and our amazing sound designer and editor, Christopher Beal. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for joining us out in the Bay at outinthebay.org. ¶¶